It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. The problem of child labor continues to plague the meatpacking industry.
Two of the biggest meat processors in the country, Purdue Farms and JBS, will pay a combined $8 million for employing children. JBS has a beef plant in Green Bay that was not named in the Labor Department's violations.
It's illegal to hire kids under 18 in meatpacking plants because of the hazardous conditions.
Attorney Alexia Kulwick is an associate professor at the UW-Madison School for Workers. Kulwick starts by explaining what these children were hired to do.
So in the case of the children, my understanding is they were working for third-party contractors who would come into the facilities to sanitize the facility for the next day. And actually, let me amend that already. That's definitely what they were doing with the JBS case. In the poultry case, in the Purdue case, I believe that they both had some issues with a staffing company and with actually having underage minors operating equipment during the normal workday. And so, you know, sanitizing the facilities can be a very dangerous job in meatpacking and poultry processing, where we're talking about, you know, the remnants of the entire process during the day of slaughter and processing of these animals, right? So it's bloody work. It's dangerous work. Sometimes folks turn on the equipment to clean it, even though they should not. And that's an instance in which people will get harmed. And in the case, at least of JBS, I believe the contractor was also doing it as an overnight shift. So not only were underage minors not supposed to be doing hazardous occupations under the Fair Labor Standards Act, but they shouldn't have been working overnight like that either.
When companies like these food processors, manufacturing companies, rely on a third-party staffing firm, are they able to skirt any, you know, laws? Is this a way to get around some employment issues when in this type of way?
I think it's certainly an attempt to skirt labor laws in this way. One thing I found interesting, we've seen over the years increased efforts by several different labor agencies to pursue sort of the final employer, the face that we might see, such as the JBS or the Purdue, as a joint employer of the employer that may have technically done the work. And so what we tend to see is because that end user employer, they call it, really has the say-so about everything, right? They make all of the decisions, that these agencies will keep them liable as well. It's not clear to me that the Department of Labor could prove that was the case in the JBS case, but I'm thinking that JBS just agreed to settle the case nonetheless. It is clear in the Purdue case that the Department of Labor found that Purdue and its sanitation cleaning company were operating as joint employers so that they both had liability for labor violations.
I had this flashback to 2023 when a Wisconsin-based food sanitation company paid $1.5 million in penalties for illegally employing, it was more than 100 children. And the federal investigators found at that point they were exposed to hazardous chemicals and dangerous conditions and overnight shifts. What has changed since a violation like this?
Well, I can't speak to how that particular facility has changed its operations. But what I can say is industry-wide, I don't think we've seen a lot of change. We've seen more recognition from government entities that these are dangerous jobs, and they have been regulated as jobs that are prohibited for employers to assign to minors under 18. So that's under federal law and regulations. In, I want to say, October of 2024, OSHA came out with stricter guidance to ensure the health and safety of workers at these plants, and specifically for the sanitation workers at these plants. So the regulators have certainly made some additional changes, but I think the fact that we continue to find out about child labor at these plants and the common assumption or the common direction of underage minors doing this work, this is not something that these companies have been blind to until this happened in 2023. I think it's been going on for a while, and I think they continued to do it until they had to reach agreement with the Department of Labor.
JBS is considered the world's largest meat packer. JBS has a beef processing plant in Green Bay. how do children get these jobs in the first place?
We can't ignore that when we're talking about children working in these plants, by and large, we're talking about migrant children, right? So I believe that the companies employ these folks. They are looking for the cheapest labor. They're looking for folks that are not going to be raising health and safety concerns because they're intimidated within the system to be able to report these kinds of problems. So they're an easy group to exploit in terms of labor concerns. I think we see within families of folks that relocate here that they tend to work in some of the same places within the same community and friends and sometimes the children as well to just be able to make more earnings to support that family.
Looking further at migrants who hold down some of these jobs, President Trump promising to deport a large number of workers who are in the U.S. without legal status. What effect would proposed moves like this have on the meatpacking industry and its workforce?
I think it could potentially have a very striking effect, right? I mean, I think we know that there are a lot of immigrant workers in these facilities. That has really sustained the food system in the United States in large part generally. And we're going to see closings of plants. And one thing that I'll just say is that if we see plants closing, it will be somewhat like what we saw when we saw plants closing during COVID, in that it had a real ripple effect throughout the food system, because the reality is there's still only a couple of thousand, I think it's like 2,400 meat processing plants in the country. And there used to be an awful lot more, but with centralization, that number has gone down dramatically. So a couple of plants close, that could have a real impact on the ability to even produce the amount of food the country's producing, which will then have an impact on prices as well.
In terms of inspections and oversight at these plants, last week the Trump administration fired 17 inspectors general, including the inspector assigned to the Agriculture Department. How could that impact these plants in terms of investigations, inspections, and things like that?
Yeah, I'm really concerned about that because the inspector generals are, of course, supposed to be independent and neutral, right? But I think that we'll start to see that if there's an increase in reporting, for example, or if the Trump administration sees problems with some of the work being performed by inspector generals, that they too could have their jobs in jeopardy, which means, in my opinion, that we could end up seeing less reporting and less attention brought to the serious issues and the serious working conditions in these facilities. I will say that if we're talking about a USDA processing plant, they have inspectors on site every day that are not necessarily inspector generals, right? But they are USDA FSIS inspectors responsible for all the problems in those facilities. And then I do have real concerns about the neutrality going forward for them.
Alexia, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Alexia Kulwick is an attorney with expertise in labor and employment law. She's an associate professor at the UW School for Workers. Now, as we dig further into child labor regulations here in Wisconsin, we turn to research that connects youth work permits with a reduction in child labor violation cases. Nina Mast is a policy and economic analyst at the Economic Policy Institute. That's a nonprofit think tank in Washington. Nina, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you for having me.
You find in your research that youth work permits can strengthen labor standards to protect children. Can you lay that out for us? Why do you find these types of permits effective?
You know, we know this intuitively, that the youth work permit system allows us to essentially collect information about a minor's employment relationship. It allows us to track their employment, and it allows us to affirm the consent of their parent or guardian to sign off on what their job duties are, what they're going to be expected to do in the workplace. And so this is a really important tool for being able to ensure that minors are employed in safe and age-appropriate workplaces. And recent research from researchers at the University of Maryland have kind of quantified the importance of youth work permits. So they found that between 2008 and 2020, states that mandated systems like this saw 15.5% fewer child labor violations and 35.2% fewer minors involved in these violations compared with states that did not have youth work permit systems. And the research also showed that the work permit system is particularly important during periods of low unemployment, like we were in such a position coming out of the pandemic, because employers are turning to children to fill job vacancies that are left open because of the refusal to raise wages for adult workers. And so when unemployment rates decrease, child labor violations increase by about 5.7%.
In your analysis, you do cite Wisconsin as an example of work permits serving as a way to investigate violations. What do you think Wisconsin is doing well on youth work permitting?
One important thing that we've noticed in Wisconsin is really just that there is a recognition of the importance that youth work permits are serving in the state. You know, unfortunately, Wisconsin had already gotten rid of youth work permits for 16 and 17-year-olds back in 2017. But we've seen, you know, union leaders, advocates, as well as the governor, Governor Evers, acknowledge the importance of youth work permits and keeping kids safe on the job. And the unique thing about the Wisconsin system is that they're actually using the small fees from that employers have to pay for the work permit to actually fund their labor enforcement, specifically their child labor enforcement. And so it's really a win-win because it's a system that not only keeps kids safe, but also funds this enforcement priority that we know is underfunded in a lot of states and at the federal level.
Looking at oversight here, state child labor laws set laws for the underage labor that go beyond the minimum federal standards. Federal standards, you point out, from the 1938 Fair Labor Standards Act. What protections are on the books at the federal level?
So we have mainly the protections at the federal level mainly cover minors under 16, but they do cover minors under 18 in the sense of the hazardous occupation orders. So there's a list of 17 hazardous occupations that no minor under 18 can do, because these are jobs that we've deemed incredibly dangerous, both for youth and adults, but particularly for minors. It also governs the hours that minors under 16 can work. That's per day, per week, especially during the school year. But, you know, like you said, this is a law that was passed in 1938 and largely has not been updated since that time, and was passed at a time when fewer than half of students were graduating high school. And so there's really been widespread acknowledgement that the Fair Labor Standards Act, while important, is insufficient to protecting workers in our modern economy. And that is why, you know, many states have youth work permit systems in place. Although they're not required under federal law, they're a very important tool for keeping kids safe on the job.
Which sounds like it's leaving it then to states to strengthen these work permitting systems and having these systems in place. What can states do to make these systems stronger and more effective?
I would say the first step is really just to assess the work permit systems they have in place to see where there are areas that they could strengthen, where they could, really modernize the system. So for example, both Illinois and Michigan recently strengthened their work permit systems in the past year, just to make them more streamlined, easier to follow, and more effective at the goal of keeping kids safe on the job. And I think, you know, especially in this environment where we're under the Trump administration, we're expecting at least less enforcement of child labor laws, but potentially even attacks on the federal standards we do have. It's really an important moment for states to be assessing their child labor laws generally and thinking about how they can shore up standards at the state level, because we don't know if we're going to be able to continue to rely on the federal standards that we've historically been able to depend on.
And yet there are some states that are rolling these work permits back, Iowa and Alabama, for underage workers, arguing that these serve as government red tape that infringe on the rights of parents and teens. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, there has been this pretty coordinated effort across several states. You know, since 2023, eight states proposed eliminating their youth work permit systems, and three have actually signed such bills into law. You know, we, of course, they use this this language related to this to red tape and bureaucracy. This comes directly from the Foundation for Government Accountability, which is a right-wing think tank that has really focused very heavily on this issue and has kind of shopped this legislation around to many states and has been moderately successful at it. But you know, we actually see the bureaucratic aspect of the work permit system to play an important role. It's not the goal to be able to hire minors as quickly, as conveniently, as easily as possible for employers. The goal is actually to make sure that when minors are employed, it's in a safe and age-appropriate workplace that actually has some benefits to them and is not merely serving the employer.
Here in Wisconsin, these youth work permits, they're not needed for jobs in agriculture or domestic service work. What stands out to you there? And is an industry like agriculture necessary to have these types of permits?
So this gets to a larger problem within our federal laws and our federal child labor laws, in that standards for agriculture are just much lower. Young people can work longer hours and more hazardous jobs with fewer regulations in place in agriculture than in non-agricultural employment. And that's just the reality that the, you know, that is embedded within the Fair Labor Standards Act and has been, and it's kind of mirrored in states across the country. And it's certainly a problem. I mean, the agricultural industry is responsible for more than half of fatalities among minors in the workplace, even though it accounts for a very small share of the employment. And so we absolutely do see the need to raise the standards in agriculture, not just on youth work permits, but on all the standards we have in child labor. But it's just been a very difficult uphill battle because of the lobbying pressure and just the historical entrenched limitations that we have on labor standards in agriculture.
Nina, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
That is Nina Mast, a policy and economic analyst at the Economic Policy Institute. Earlier, we spoke with attorney Alexia Kulwick, an associate professor at the UW-Madison School for Workers. We've been talking about recent child labor violations in meat processing plants and the impact of youth work permits here in Wisconsin, as some states have tried to eliminate work permit requirements for underage workers and their employers. They argue the mandates are a form of government red tape and that they infringe on the rights of teens and their parents.
Coming up, a Portage County project brings people in small towns together.
There's just so much evidence behind how social connection can affect your health, and on the flip side, how social isolation can affect your health as well.
That's next here on Wisconsin Today.